All right, it's a Friday night. Dinner at Junta's house.
Yes.
You get three people, dead or alive. Who's coming over?
I can choose any three people.
Any three people
that have ever existed.
Dead or alive, yeah.
Easy question.
You can't make up someone that hasn't existed, I guess, right?
I can or I can't?
You can't. Oh. They have to have had a pulse at some point.
Okay. If I could make someone up, it would be like me riding a dragon that I'm like mixed with between a ninja.
I feel like on like, Saturday nights when like the girls are around, that's who you eat dinner with in your own mind anyways.
That's absolutely right. All right. Three people, easy. Hitler, Jesus, Drake, Champagne Poppy.
Really? Yeah. I think we shout him out a lot. We are huge Drake fans. You know, just no love. No love. No reciprocal love over social media from Drake. Okay, so that's an eclectic group to say the least. Yes. We got to start Hitler first.
Yeah, Hitler.
What are you expecting to get out of this?
I'm actually a little surprised. He even in that list, his name came out first.
Yeah, that's concerning.
I'm a little concerned too.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel like they're people you can learn a lot from in life.
Like learn what not to do?
I mean, yeah, learning what not to do is the same thing as learning what to do, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's like the vice versa.
But I feel like I could have
known. I mean,
I'm
not going to fucking genocide a race or anything.
I could have known. You didn't have to, like, you know, invite Hitler over for dinner to learn. Like, oh, maybe I probably shouldn't do that.
So, how many people have done things in this world that so many people, the entire world knows about what Hitler did, right?
He's the Coca-Cola of genocide.
Yeah,
he's
the Coca-Cola. He's, like, high-grade asshole.
Yeah.
Like, you can learn a lot from an asshole like that. I mean
he's the gold standard.
You know, even if you just ask him like one question, like why Hitler?
Yeah.
Why'd you do this?
Yeah, I guess. Alright, so we got him, Jesus.
Jesus.
Now
same
that
thing.
Right there,
same
quite
thing.
The dynamic. We're
why?
Just swinging it to the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. Same question.
Okay.
Why Jesus? Why all of this?
And then
Champagne Posse. Will you just sing to me?
Is that just it? Just slow jams.
Yeah,
all
not I don't want you to rap. I want you to sing to me.
Okay, serenade.
Make me feel.
Yeah, just all, I can't even say the word. That drives me fucking nuts. There's a few things, like social media nomenclature, like the word just feels as a standalone, I guess.
Feels.
Is it an adjective? An adverb?
Yeah.
That drives me nuts. That and people that use the word, and this might be powerlifting people, but the word boys. As like a group of people that do things, but they spell boys B-O-I-Z or something. It's,
yeah, it's
I'll explain
it's
off.
It's pretty douchey.
Yeah, it's bad. And I know that I'm going to get this in the neck from some people that do it. Okay,
right.
So
those are the Dr. Shallow Feels on the topic.
Fuck. I think you got it. Dude, you got to go Donald J. Trump.
Okay.
He's got to be at the table. He's kind of like Hitler, I guess.
He's, oh, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
We're still fine now.
The other two would be tough. I gotta ask this question.
So it's just gonna be you and fucking
just me and Trump,
man?
Just sitting down in the tower eating a taco bowl or something.
I feel like he'd be entertaining.
Yeah, if nothing else.
Yeah.
John Stewart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
And like, I don't know, Tiger Woods? Tiger Woods would be a good one. I think Tiger. Right. Lance Armstrong.
That's four.
I'm pulling out John Stewart, Tiger Woods. I think that'd be a good group.
Okay.
Because it's like, there was points in every single one of, like, all those guys were liked at one point, and then really fucking not liked at another point. So how do you go, like, how do you all go from being, like, you know, America's sweetheart in some to just, like, fucking your wife throwing your 9-iron through the back of your Escalade? Like,
yeah.
I think that would be, they would have a lot in common, I think. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say, though, I'm going to say two of my three. Like, just Trump the fuck out of yours.
No pun intended.
All right. Feels. But
Jesus and
I'm going to bench Drake.
Okay.
I'm going to bench him when it comes down to the brawl. But Hitler and Jesus, I think they could take on most people.
Well, they're old school, man. It's like, you know.
They are old
school. Yeah, that's the oldest school. All right, fuck it. What are we on now? 15?
Yeah, 16.
16. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to talk about accessory movements.
This was a request off Instagram. Someone had asked us what our favorite accessory movements are. And it's interesting because being CrossFit and powerlifting, come at this from two very different approaches. So this will be one time where we actually probably don't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
Where a lot of this is like, my shoulder hurts. Well, this is why. I concur. see you next time. But this is going to be a little bit more contentious, where it's like, I mean, I look at accessory work really differently because my objective outcome in powerlifting is a lot different than yours. So why don't you start us off as far as your sort of thought process behind accessory movements?
Yeah, so CrossFit is basically a sport full of accessory movements, right? You're doing things to make you better at, you know, your three
doing
lifts.
Things.
Yeah, you're doing things to make you better at doing things. No, but you in your sport, you have three lifts that you focus on, and then you have, you know, all these accessory movements, a bunch of other movements to strengthen you for those three lifts. When you think of accessory movements, you probably think of something different than I do, because a lot of those movements you use as accessory movements are things that I'll be tested on.
I gotcha.
In CrossFit, like you know, whether it's something like just a pull up or a weighted pull up, or maybe a toes to bar, something
front
core
squats?
Strengthening. Front squats, yes, absolutely. Okay. That's a huge movement in CrossFit, and that's even, you know, a part of our cleans, right?
Yeah.
So I guess in that aspect, a front squat is accessory movement for a clean, but in CrossFit, it's standalone.
Yeah. It's, I mean, logistically, you guys wouldn't even have enough time for it to matter, right? Because it's like your top end strength is such a small pillar of success when it comes to the overall, like, being good at... Because it's funny, because I look at this in a certain way where it's like, I'm lining myself up against competition. It's like, oh, this guy's a crazy bencher. This guy's a crazy squatter. It's like, okay, that's great. You can still be a better powerlifter. And I think, oh my God, what a worldly view to look at it. You know, you need to be good at three things. You guys need to be good at essentially... I feel like CrossFit is going to turn just everything into, like, who can do it better, faster, or with more weight.
Oh, yeah, dude. I could cook my breakfast and eat it so much quicker than most people on this earth because of CrossFit.
Yeah.
Everything's
18.1 is bacon and eggs.
Dude, I see a clock and I'm like, all right, I could get this stuff as fast as I can.
Oh, that makes you so nervous.
No,
it's funny. They have, like, you have a minute in most federations. I'd say you have a minute once, like, platform is ready. The judge calls platform ready. Like, bar is loaded. You're ready to go.
Yep.
You have a minute to, like, get under the bar. And that's kind of what I'm used to. In Australia, they kind of let you, you know, they're laid back. They let you kind of take your time. So I was, like, late getting my knees wrapped. So I was, if you can watch it on the YouTube, like, it takes, I was rushed. Like, I ran as fast as I could to the bar thinking I only had a minute and, like, just rushed the setup and everything. And that idea of, like, being on the clock fucking stresses me out like no other. Like, I'm up there, I'm not wearing clothes, and there's, like, a clock going. It's like, oh, shit.
that's my comfort zone.
Right. Well, so when you go accessory movements, I mean, your accessories would be what then? Because you do have to do something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not saying that I don't do them. It's probably just very different from what you do.
Okay.
And we'll touch on this at the end. This is a good point to close on once we see what you have. But what I focus on with accessory movements are core stabilization and stabilizing joints.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot less or a lot more focused than what a lot of people think when they think, okay, I'm going to do, I don't know, close grip bench press because it's going to help my regular grip bench press, right? So more so I'm like, well, basically everything we do in CrossFit comes down to core stability and either, you know, whether I mainly focus on the large joints, so hips and shoulders, knock on wood or something. I don't have many problems with my smaller joints, you know, like elbows, wrists, ankles. But so my accessory movements will be towards building core strength, core stability, a nice rigid spine. Not rigid spine, but being able to brace my spine, keep it rigid while I'm moving. And then stabilizing joints dynamically. So overhead, rotator cuff strengthening, stuff like that. And a good way to kind of put this all together is what we do, and to relate it to what you do, is what we do in CrossFit, I think it's very similar to what you guys would call the conjugate method, right?
C word.
So
let's do everything but the thing we're trying to get better at.
So, yes and no at the same time.
I want you to explain conjugate for those, like, listeners that maybe aren't in tune with, like, sort of the nomenclature. Like, what would you say conjugate is?
So it's a method of training where it's originally from powerlifting, right? So the idea is I want to get better at squatting, but I'm not actually going to train the squat. I'm going to train all these, we'll say accessory movements or different variations of a squat, and then I'm going to come back and test my squat, and the idea is that my squat will be higher now because I strengthen these specific movement patterns. You know, I spend a lot of time working on, you know, quads, hamstrings, low back, whatever, but then my squat goes up, and that's essentially exactly what we're doing in CrossFit. I might not be on a deadlift cycle, but a lot of the things I do in CrossFit are going to strengthen me in the same way that's going to increase my deadlift over time. So maybe I test my deadlift. I can deadlift, we'll say 475. Yeah. Then over the next 12 weeks, I'm doing a lot of heavy kettlebell swings, heavy front squats, Olympic lifting, cleaning, snatching, back squats, all that stuff. And say I haven't touched a deadlift in those 12 weeks, maybe I come back, I pull 500. So...
And that to me is like, it's your, again, your focus isn't on top end strength. It just becomes a consequence of sub-maximal work a lot of the times, which for us isn't the correlation that we're looking for. I mean, conjugate in its West Side and its origin, or at least popularized by West Side, just for powerlifting alone, it to me, for raw lifting, so people got to remember that West Side was geared lifting. Like, hey, let's get us in like, five of our fattest friends and let's help each other wear these giant canvas fucking suits and lift weights we can't lift. So it's like, I don't want to fucking, I trained in a conjugate gym before and it was just like, all right, what are we doing today? It's like, and it was almost like they had a wheel of like accommodated resistance, like implements, like, oh, we're going to use, spin the giant fucking prices of our right wheel. And it's like reverse bands. Okay. And we're going to use, again, 120 pounds of chains. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? So you're setting up this, like, ridiculous bar with, like, there's bands pulling one way and chains pulling the other. And it's like, whoa, this will, oh, there's nothing better. And powerlifters can attest to this. There's nothing better than West Side math. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Like, I have an idea.
So there's a bar on the floor. You think there's a bar on the floor. There's a bunch of fucking chains covering it. There's bands around the end and all this. But it's like, people will try and tell you how much it is at the top. I'm deadlifting. So it's like 120 pounds on the floor, but it's like 960 at the top. And it's like, fuck, with the chains, sure, maybe, you know, you can weigh the chains. If all the chains are off the floor, then you can add. But the bands kill me. Yeah. It's like... double reverse minis for triple speed work off 3-inch blocks and briefs with strats. Like, it's like fucking 80 pounds plus band tension at the top. It's like, you can't know that. But like, for me as a raw lifter, like, and we're going far afield away from accessories and we'll circle back in a minute, but it's the technique is where you're going to be able to really dial in top end strength. Is the efficiency of the movement. It's like, if I'm standing there with a bar on my back and there's bands pulling me one way and chains pulling me another way, and I really can't groove the rep like I otherwise should, I'm not practicing good practice, right? Like, that's not the technique that I'm going to be using when I'm on the platform. There's no federation yet that has, you know, your best banded block pull as a fourth lift. It's like, if I have to squat, bench, and dead, I'm going to practice squat, benching, and deadlift. So for me, the accessory work, and I mean, I think we need to preface with this too, because if we both, to some extent, do accessory work, whether you're be more stabilizing, recovery, positioning, that kind of thing, like more on a, like a back end, kind of stabilizing overall health role, where mine is more, you know, I want to build strength in the hamstrings or the quads. All of this hinges on assessment, right? Like personal assessment, where if we're, I mean, I'm going to go through my favorite accessory work for the big lifts, and it's going to be because I'm weak in these areas, in these muscles, in these movements that need to be strengthened. So I'm not saying like, this is the best accessory work for deadlift, period. This is the best accessory work for squat, period. Because it all depends on where you're weak, right? Like, and I think the idea of assessment is the backbone of everything, whether it's getting healthier or getting stronger. And oftentimes those two things are the same fucking thing. So do you want to dive? I mean, I guess I'll dive in then with, I mean, start with squat. For me, front squat, quad dominant movement. Biggest thing that I like about the front squat is not just like that it loads the quads, kind of unloads the lower back. Upper back strength with front squatting. Like you think you got a bar on your back, that extension of your thoracic spine is a consequence of your shoulders being locked under the bar. The hands are behind the bar. If you can wedge your hands in there tight enough, it's really hard to go kind of over the top, like lose that thoracic spine deflection. But in that front rack position, in back squat. But I mean, in a front squat, that thoracic extension that's otherwise passive with your hands on the bar is now totally active, right? Mm-hmm. The upper back extension, like the anti-flexion role that your erectors play or your extensors play of your upper back, is huge. So now I get a kind of a 2-for-1 on the front squat. Build the quads, helps you pull out of the bottom of like a low bar squat, but also helps build my upper back strength. So front squatting for me is not just a good squat accessory movement, but it's also a really good deadlift accessory movement. Think in a deadlift, how much you rely on that extension of the upper back to finish the movement. So front squat for me, as far as squat accessory, again, it's, I mean, our upper back is something I always need strengthening, quads that are always something that needs strengthening. If you're really strong in the quads, then you might benefit more from like a Romanian deadlift or GHR or reverse hyper or something more posterior chain. But for me, I spent 20 years of my life in a squat position playing goalie. Hamstrings, not an issue, at least not yet, until I get my quads to a point where they're strong and the hamstrings are weak, then we need to
constantly
switch folks.
Trying to find the perfect ratio.
Exactly. But as long as everything's going up, then the top numbers should be going up. And that's the thing too, it's like there's this idea called the principle of dynamic correspondence. If you've ever been on Elite FTS, I think the Russian dude that originally, the guy that invented plyometrics, first popularized the word dynamic correspondence. And it's like, yeah, front squat can be a good quad exercise, but if you're not seeing the benefit on the return of the objective outcome that you're remeasuring, don't fucking front squat. If you go through like an 8-week progressive overload cycle on a front squat and your back squat is still where it was before, get rid of it. Yeah. Don't do it. I mean, if your form is on par and all the variables are equated for and it didn't work, on to the next one. Let it go. And that's the thing with the conjugate method is like, it's literally taking that spaghetti strainer full of exercises and just going, huh, and just throwing it against the fucking wall and just being like, all right, what if everything sticks? Like, what if that top end goes up and you've been every week cycling through a different accessory movement? It's like, okay, what if you were able to isolate that single one and go, okay, it's the box squat that's really helping me. Let's do a box squat instead of doing it once every 5 weeks. Let's do that fucker every week. Yeah. How much more can I get out of it? But you don't know because there's too many variables. You're just like spray and pray approach and you have no idea what's working and what's not. Where it's like, I really like a more tailored approach. And it comes from almost a lack of assessment on the conjugate side where it's like, fuck it. Quads, this does quads, that does quads. I think that does quads. We can put chains on that. That would definitely do quads. And it's like, all right, let's retest in 5 weeks. And it's like, okay, cool. It went up. But what helped, what I mean? So
less efficient system almost.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be in my approach. And again, it's, it's apples and oranges. It's raw powerlifting versus like geared powerlifting, single ply, multiply. Let's jump to deadlift to include you in it a little bit because now you don't do it on purpose, but in your training, what do you feel is a good accessory movement to building that top end deadlift in strength?
So top end deadlifts, that's something that we do test, and actually I just tested mine like a week or two ago.
Yeah.
I hit 510.
Hey, yeah. 10 pound PR?
10 pound PR, yeah.
PR's a PR.
PR's a PR. But a big thing that I'd say helps with me is unilateral stabilization.
Okay.
So like a single leg RDL, sure. Maybe with a kettlebell in the opposite hand, something like that. Opposite you, I'm pretty good in the quads. It's hamstrings that sometimes, a lag on me a little bit. So that's something I think I could really focus on that, really isolate that. And the thing I like about unilateral single leg stuff, especially where I'm using, I'm balancing on my right leg, the loads in my left hand, is coming back to that core activation that we were talking about before. If you're keeping those hips in line, you're keeping those shoulders in line, you have to keep that core pretty rigid.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a really big thing for me.
Okay. I like that too because that keeps the relative load down on the joints with still stimulus on the muscle. Because that's powerlifters really lose sight of muscles don't know what weight is, right? It's not like your bicep is like, oh fuck, 45-pound dumbbell, I can't curl that. It's like, yeah, if you swung for the fence, you could do it, but it's just a stimulus, right? Like, it's not weight, it's not the weight, you know, tempo is a stimulus. Stability, or in your case, lack of stability in the starting position. Like, what's the weight you use for that? For like a single leg RDL?
Not much. I'll use like 35, maybe a 53 smoke. Kettlebell.
And you know what's really happy when you do that? Your knees, your hips, your ankles, your low back is stoked that you're only putting on it. Because, I mean, you could RDL, you could grip and rip, strap in, belt in for like a, you know, 5x5 at like 275 on an RDL, and it's like, okay, low back's not happy. Hamstring, honestly, probably under a really similar stimulus, although the weight of the load is different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you find more stabilization stuff has a better dynamic correspondence.
Yeah. Accessory work for me is always much lighter, easier to deal with in the, you know, central nervous system.
Yeah.
Something I can do on, we'll say, my recovery days, because it's not going to fucking wreck me.
Sure.
Right? So it's stuff that's going to help me build stability, and it's going to help me give a little bit of attention to certain areas that I feel from that assessment that I feel need that attention.
Is that something to you that is uniquely something you do personally, like because of your academic background? Like, do you look around at the other... I promise we are not recording this strapped to the back of a fucking flatbed truck. We're in some industrial neighborhood. There's trucks that drive by. Deal with it. Total aside. Do you feel like that's something unique to you as a CrossFit athlete slash chiropractor? Or is that something you see across the board through the top end lifters?
I think higher end lifters, higher end competitors will do this on their own.
Okay.
I think the majority of people I work with, they say, my deadlift's not that good. I'm just going to deadlift more.
Yeah, sure.
You know, either similar. Their accessory, what should be accessory, is just increased volume or increased intensity.
Woo!
Right? Which is, you know, not the answer.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, it's something we'll, like you said, we'll close on. But it's identifying what your true rate limiter is.
I mean,
anyone who's been to, like, one of my seminars, that's all I talk about is, you know, really assessing for your true weakness, your true imbalance. Is it really your hamstrings? Well, if you're getting hurt, probably not. Okay, so deadlift for me. Do you guys do any deficit work? That's a huge one for me.
Yeah, we will.
So, like, there's this common, and it's funny, I used to train with this guy, Bill Newman, he's 2,000 plus total, huge, fucking crazy strong, and he sort of flipped the paradigm on me, where it's like, people used to think that you would deadlift off a deficit to get stronger from the floor, and deadlift off blocks to get stronger at lockout. Where, again, think of this idea as stimulus. So I really like deficit deadlifts because it helps me with my lockout. Like, I can break a lot more off the floor than I can finish, where it's like, I know a lot of guys that can, that they fail, and it's like the fucking bar is just
hasn't moved,
yeah. Right? So they'll train deficits and deficits and deficits, and guess what? That bar's still not moving off the floor. So he sort of flipped it, where it's like, actually, the overload on the block pulls, because you can block pull more than you can deficit, shorter range of motion, right? Helps build that strength off the floor, because that now that bar that's, you know, 500 pounds, and if you're block pulling 600 pounds, seems a lot lighter when you have to pull it. So that initial stimulus of staying with the weight, that's, you know, perceptibly lighter than what you're usually pulling off blocks. And then the flip side of that, on the deficit end, where if you're standing on like a 3-inch block, by the time you get to your lockout, you've already pre-fatigued that motion so much more than you otherwise would have. So the stimulus of the lockout is greater than it otherwise would be if you pulled from just, you know, your knees and up, right? I mean, grip and rip from, like, with straps on 4-inch blocks, you can pull a substantial amount more weight, but it's how you're implementing with intent to fix what your weak point is. So it's like, that was a big paradigm shift for me, because everyone was like, oh yeah, you're weak off the floor, move the floor further away. It's like, okay, yeah, I kind of, that makes sense. And it went with it for the longest time, and ended up doing a lot more block pulls because it was the lockout that was getting me. And then it's like, no, think about it, right? And I was like, oh fuck, like, light bulb went off. So deficits for me are a big one, because, I mean, something we talked about before, and it's the idea of training end range spinal flexion, right? Where it's like, if I'm sitting down to a deadlift and it's like, because I'll do stiff leg deadlifts from a deficit and regular. So regular's not too bad on the spine. You have to unfold a little bit more because like you're bending your knees, the back stays relatively straight compared to the stiff leg, where it's like stiff leg is knees locked in. I'm standing on a 3-inch box and I'm reaching down and touching my shoelaces and then I'm pulling from there. So that reinforces like core stability like crazy because the amount of like how long that moment arm is through that pivoting fulcrum of the midsection, like through the hips, put so much force through that you really need to sort of stabilize hard. Like my abs have never been so sore than after a session of heavy straight leg deadlifts off a deficit. And then by the time you get to that midpoint and that lockout, you've had the bar in your hands for what feels like forever. So for deadlifting, for me, it's just, again, assess where you're weak. But for me, because I'm weak at lockout, I put in stiff legs or conventional deadlifts off a deficit to really overload the stimulus without really overloading the top end weight. And that for me is a really good like carryover, really good dynamic correspondence to building my deadlift. Mm-hmm. Now pressing, I put in pressing just as a general sort of blanket statement because you guys don't do much horizontal pressing, right? Would love so much to see a 1RM, what do you bench, like CrossFit sort of wad.
It's, I mean, not one rep max. We have one. It's called Linda. They call it the 3 bars of death. It's like, CrossFitters are going to be disappointed with me. I don't even know. It's like a bodyweight bench press, like 1 1/4 body weight deadlift.
Okay.
And then something with a clean. It's like a 1.5. Or no. No, the deadlift's like 1.5.
How many named workouts are there?
It's a ton. A fucking ton, dude.
Do they struggle to find names for them sometimes? Are there some it's like, okay. Are they like storms? We're like, really?
So I don't know. I think it just started out like, they're like, this workout is this name. And then like all the CrossFit workouts at the beginning had a name.
Yeah.
And then people realize like, fuck, you can make a CrossFit workout out of anything. And they're just like, all right, we're done naming the workouts.
Yeah, okay, all right. So it's not like storms or like, oh, fuck, no, we had a Hurricane Charlie last year. We need to call it something else.
No.
Did you know that the worst hurricanes in in the United States were all female names? Mm. Did you know that? And are you at all surprised by it? I love how you're just like, I knew that. I didn't know that, but I intrinsically knew that these would do the most damage.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Seems intuitive.
Okay, so you did have a workout with a press in it.
Yeah, I personally don't bench press too much.
Yeah.
I see the benefit in it, but...
Well, I mean, this is an interesting point then. Like, what is... If you were to sit down on a bench, what's your bench?
Oh, man. I did a 5 rep not too long ago at, like, 235. I think the most I've ever benched, like, 275. What's your body weight? Like, $175.
Okay, so, I mean, this is a testament to the conjugate method, you know, being beneficial. Guy yeah. never benches. He's 170 and he can throw up like, you know, 2 1/4 on a bench. That's pretty fucking good. Right? Yeah. Like relative to body weight, that's pretty good. You go to any gym.
I mean, 100 pounds over body weight before. I don't know if that's
a thing
in the powerlifting world, but I'm like, fuck,
it's all relative, right? Yeah. Like I guess you'd have to go off like the Wilks. Maybe we'll do that. Like we'll do your Wilks on your bench press. Like that's how powerlifters measure like relative strength.
Okay.
And it sort of equilibrates for body weight. But yeah, I mean, that's a testament right there. Because it's like, you take any other 170-pound dude who has never, there doesn't bench a lot, he's not going to be able to bench a lot. But you overhead press, you know, you train shoulder stability. There's a decent amount of like plyometric throwing, kind of explosive power. So all the pieces are there. You know, if you dialed in your technique for a few weeks, you could probably get 300. That kind of thing. But I mean, being on the other end, and I'm not a huge conjugate guy, but that to me speaks to the benefit of, you know, you put all the parts together, and if you train the parts, then you're gonna be able to fucking figure it out, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But for me, I mean, bench is a bitch. Fucking hate the bench press. For me, it's like, just, you never realize how technical a bench press can be until you get into powerlifting. Oh, yeah. And it's almost like the first meet I did so well because it's like I didn't have to think about it. Like, there was no paralysis by analysis. Now it's like, and I think I just got lucky, but now it's like, okay, bar path, when am I flaring? What? And I really like just the way I bench, and a lot of people sort of go back and forth on this, is like lats, like chin-ups and rows for bench work. Because, I mean, you can bench with your lats, which is only true of some morphology. Because, and again, that's what it comes down to, assessment, right? Do you take a look at yourself? Where are you weak? That kind of thing. If you're weak off your chest, in my opinion, and you're not like a super fat dude, because I think of it like this. If I'm side-lying on the bench, your accessory work is going to be dictated on where your elbow lies when the bar touches your chest or touches whatever, your stomach, wherever you're placing down it. If your elbows don't cross that plane of the body and do extension, don't need your lats. You don't need to train your lats at all. Like, if you're either like a super barrel-chested guy or a T-Rex dude with real short arms, and you get that bar to your chest in a manner that doesn't have your elbows like past the plane of your body in like shoulders and hyperextension, then your lats are a moot point. Then it's delts, then it's triceps, then it's whatever. But for me, it's like, if you're like a longer guy, more likely going to have to go through more shoulder extension and flexion and get the elbows past the plane of the body, then that's when lats come in. I've gotten like online knife fights with fat, dumb fucking internet trolls. And it's like, because they don't understand this idea that your lats, I mean, if you were to say rolls of the lat from a muscular function, what would you say? Yeah. Adductors of the shoulder.
Yeah.
Internal rotators of the shoulder, extenders of the shoulder. But in an extended position, your lats are flexors of the shoulder, right? Like, I do it to people all the time. Just like, hey, put your hands all the way behind your back and flex your lats. Their hands come towards midline and just a little bit past, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe bodybuilders, it's easy. You can go all the way back, front relaxed. Oh, okay, hands are in front of you. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's like, if I can eccentrically load that rotation into my lat. So as the bar comes down to your chest, you're externally rotating your shoulders. So if you're externally rotating and you're eccentrically loading into that external rotation, I can either A, load my pecs. It's an internal rotator. It has the ability to eccentrically load into external rotation. I mean, to make a parallel, your bicep is a flexor of the elbow, but I can do heavy eccentrics as my bicep is working into extension. It's the same idea, right? So what I'll do is I'll use my lats to eccentrically load external rotation as the bar lowers down into extension. And then by the time that bar hits my chest, my elbows are way behind me, like way underneath my body. So now I can use those lats that I've been loading the entire time to flex the shoulder past neutral and then get my shoulders to a point where then my pecs can take over to finish that flexion, adduction, internal rotation. So chin-ups, weighted chin-ups, just anything that targets the lats, for me is accessory work. Again, it's something that benefits the way I bench. But a good metric of that's going to be a beneficial accessory for you is, are you failing off the chest? Are your elbows way behind you? Like, are you barrel-chested or are you narrow? So usually narrower guys, longer limbs, benefit more from lat work. Now, is there, I mean, again, you don't do it on purpose, but for your pressing overhead.
Yeah. This is one that there's absolutely accessory that not just people who are pressing overhead, but everyone I think in CrossFit or just that does a sport in general should be working on. It's basically rotator cuff strengthening.
Yeah.
So working on external rotation of the shoulder, scapular retraction, depression.
Yeah.
So my favorite exercises for that are super simple. The T's, Y's, and W's.
Yeah.
Or however the fuck. Whatever you want to put them in.
You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So I like to do it with, I'll do it with some 5-pound plates. Yeah. I'll do it with like a crossover symmetry, just a resistance band.
Yeah.
However you want to do it. I think that stuff is extremely important. Yeah. Just to any sports where you're using your shoulders, especially to pressing overhead.
Yeah.
That helps you, first of all, it helps you get into good position. If you can go through full range of motion on these exercises, you have enough range of motion in that shoulder and scapula to be stable overhead.
Yeah.
So you drill that stability 100%. And then after that, it's just once you're in these positions, those muscles are strengthening the muscles that keep you in good position. So you know that throughout the entire press overhead, you can be staying in strong positions that you're not going to get injured in.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about segueing into a final point of
you know, identifying what your real rate limiter is, and that how a lot of your accessory movements are unconventional in the sense that they're not building strength, they're preventing, and I don't even want to use the word preventing injury, but like more so fighting against the torrent of instability and unbalanced strength that a lot of sports can lead you. I mean, powerlifting is a super internally rotated in the shoulders dominant sport. Mm-hmm. We load our lats when we deadlift, we load our pecs and lats when we bench, we load our delts when we bench. So, you know, you walk in a powerlifting gym, the back of people's hands are facing, you know, the other back hand, right? Super internally rotated. Yeah. And that to me is like, again, it comes down to assessment, but that's the hardest part. Any lifter kind of worth their salt can look at a squat and be like, oh, he's failing here, he's weak here. You need to build your glutes, you need to build your hamstrings because of X, Y, and Z. Do this, that, and the other thing because I know they're hamstring it. And like, oh my God, this guy's a fucking amazing coach because he like can tell that I'm weak and blah, blah, blah. And that'll get you so far. And then it's funny because when I asked you, like, do the top-end CrossFit competitors program in a way similar to you where they prioritize accessory work tailored more towards stability rather than strength? And you said, yeah, absolutely. And then it's something exclusive to the top-end where it's like powerlifting. I mean, powerlifting seems to me like the NFL where it's like it's just not for long, right? Like you put your body under so much force, and if you don't have that vein through your workouts of like, okay, this is a lot of force, I need to scale back and really focus on what's going to help keep me stronger, because you don't get stronger in a day, you don't get stronger in a year, you get stronger over a continuation of good training cycles getting put together back to back. But like if you have a great training cycle and then all of a sudden this fucking unicorn injury pops up out of nowhere because you don't know how to assess for it on the back end, everything you did in that training cycle is now moot. It doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter about your hamstrings. It doesn't matter about your quads. It doesn't matter about your delts or lats if you fucking blow out a rotator cuff 2 weeks before the meet, or if you fucking sprain an SI joint on like your last heavy deadlift session. It's like, oh fuck, maybe I should have been working on like lateral stability drills, lumbopelvic stability, core work, that kind of thing. And it's really hard to take these people down from that high horse of like, but I'm only using a 35-pound dumbbell to do single leg RDLs. Bro, I deadlift like 700 pounds, you know what I mean? So the ability to assess for what your true rate limiter is, I think is just it takes a good bit of humility, and like it takes a fairly humble athlete to look at that and be like, you know what, yeah, I need to designate time to this. Because at the end of the day, it's a battle of attrition. It's who's standing there at the end when all is said and done. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the accessory work that you preemptively prioritize with CrossFit specifically, knowing how many different loading patterns you get into. So like upper body, we said Y's, T's, W's, lower.
So for me, I don't really prioritize accessory movement in CrossFit by even exercise, by body part. It's more so just general athleticism.
All right.
So if you think of the things, CrossFit is self-proclaimed the sport of fitness, right? So if you think of fitness.
Is it? Are you telling me? I'm telling you, all right. Okay, I have no idea.
So yes, that's what they claim, is the sport of fitness. So in the sport of fitness, the idea here is that we're not getting good at, you know, pressing in this plane. Yeah. We're not getting good at standing up with a heavy bar on our back.
Yeah.
We're getting good at all things that encompass physical movement. So that could be endurance, that could be strength, that could be plyometrics, that could be things where we're changing direction quickly, sprinting, things like that. So it could be, it's all encompassing. It's trying to be all encompassing. I think it does a very good job at doing that. So a general definition of what we're doing, we're building work capacity, right? CrossFit likes to say, we help you move large loads over long distances quickly, right? So it's a general, that's
what you guys
CrossFit
call
terminology.
Large, it's funny because there's two things to this. What you guys call large loads is adorable, but what you guys call work capacity is true work capacity. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, a lot of people just weigh in powerlifting, they weigh volume and intensity into their meet, right? Obviously, you're not going to be like doing a 20 rep max 2 weeks before the meet. And coming off a meet, it's invariably you're going to see guys hitting like 8 reps on their Instagram post and be like, trying to build the work capacity back up. Remember, Jones is over here on like this fucking 35th rep, the 225 deadlift. Like, really? You're trying to work on your fucking, you're not even in double digits yet, asshole. Like,
So that's the thing, though. So think of, let's just dumb it down as much as we can. Think like about, that. Yeah, we have 100 bales of hay, and we have it all stacked up on this side of the field. The truck's broken down about 50 yards away. We have to get those 100 bales of hay on that fucking truck.
Okay.
That's it. We're moving, you know, 100 bales of hay, probably, fuck, dude, what are they, like 80 pounds of bale?
Something like that.
So that's like 800 pounds.
800 pounds. Yeah, we're really dumbing this the fuck down, aren't we? Holy shit.
I meant it when I said it. Okay. No, but say, all right, so you might not consider, you know, your back squat compared to mine a large, mine might not be a large load compared to someone like yours.
Yeah.
But removing, you know, 80,000 pounds? 8,000?
I don't know. It's funny because I made fun of you and I'm just like fuck, dude, I don't know why.
I believe we're at 80,000.
Okay.
So, no, it's 8,000. I'm a dumbass.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're at 8,000 pounds. So, we're moving 8,000 pounds over 50 yards.
I get it.
So, that's the idea. Work capacity.
Yeah.
So, accessory movements are going to be things that help us to fill in holes in that work capacity.
Yeah.
So things that are gonna,
because I'm doing that, like, that's like, to me, I look at that like carrying the groceries in from the car. This fuck, I'm one trip of this shit.
Exactly.
I'm gonna put this on my back and I'll get it. But if you can move quickly with enough endurance, you can do the same amount of work in less time. Right? Like if I'm taking one step and then, like, you know, shitting myself and then taking another step where it's, you're just like zipping back and forth with two bales at a time, you could finish, you know, before me.
Right. So that's the idea, is to get.
Do you guys ever calculate tonnage in a workout?
I personally don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's kind of like a West Side barbell, like you said. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, it's 6 million pounds at the top.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
I just moved 300,000 pounds of weight over 16 minutes doing, you know, 225
deadlifts. Yeah. It's funny because you're adopting like a real Rain Man type voice when you do that, and the one guy, the first guy I ever met who calculated his workouts like that was like not the sharpest guy. Like, I don't want to make fun of him or anything, but like that was, he talked just like that. I'm like, huh, maybe there's something to this. Maybe you're a bit of a mouth breather if you calculate your whole workouts like total poundage.
But okay, yeah, anyways, sure, yeah, what I'm getting at is accessory work for CrossFit is filling in those gaps in your athleticism.
Yeah.
So the thing that we have to fix is any way that you can just bleed energy, right? And the number one way, in my opinion, that you're gonna be bleeding, and when I say bleed energy, is losing efficiency. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
I would probably lose blood. I'd be bleeding if I did the shit you guys tried to do.
So what I'm saying, the number one thing that's gonna make you not efficient is if you cannot effectively brace your spine.
Sure.
So shoulder stability is something I touched on before. That is extremely important, but the number one thing is going to be spinal stability.
Yeah.
And the ways I like to build that are by fucking just holding shit.
Yeah.
Carrying shit.
Yeah.
Holding shit. Yeah, some of the dynamic stuff is good, like GHDs or strict toes to bar, stuff like that. But
it's not transferable.
We can do an RX challenge. Just what? Fucking get something heavy and hold it as long as you can with good spinal
First position. Person to hold another person is getting reposted.
No, but something I'll do, we have fucking 150-pound sandbags.
Yeah.
I'll just give that thing a hug, stand up straight, and do nothing. Just hold it as long as I can until I feel like my insides are about to start bleeding.
Okay.
And that is core stability.
That's not the challenge. No internal bleeding.
Yeah, please. Don't internally bleed. But yes, so spinal bracing, core stability is the number one accessory, is the number one priority. And then the accessory I like to do for that is either holding or carrying. So you can either grab that sandbag, just stand up tall, good posture and hold it, or you can keep that good posture and just walk.
Well, I mean, and it makes sense too, like just aesthetically, like you look at the front line of the CrossFit Games, girls and guys, almost especially, it looks like, we're filming another 300. Yeah. All right, interesting.
There's so many abs everywhere.
There's so many abs. Oh my God. Like every type of abs. Like the girls in CrossFit are just ridiculous. I'm like, why does she have, like, I'm looking down like one, two, maybe three. And it's just like, bah, just like charcoal briquettes. I'm like, okay.
Annie Thor's daughter. She won the games twice, I think. Her name's Annie Thor's daughter. She's
Never mind. It sounds like Annie Thor's daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you say.
That's her how last they name. Do their names in Iceland.
It's is like, she actually?
If you were to have a daughter, Icelandic? It would be Jordan's daughter.
Is she Icelandic?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, yeah. Interesting. I'll continue.
Yeah. Anyways, she has at least 13 abs on each side of her body, okay. And they like protrude outward.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's something to be said about Icelandic genetics. Period. You know Thor, yeah. Like the yeah. real like
oh,
Thor.
Dude, I know.
So a guy I competed against is his strength coach. So
oh, fuck.
Yeah. So he posted a picture the other day, and I'm like sorry. Sebastian's like my height, maybe a little bit shorter, so like a little under 6 foot, maybe like 5'9" to 6', whatever. He's standing with Thor, and then standing with Thor's grandfather and father. Dude, they're fucking giants. Like. It's whenever, like, people say, like, oh, like, genetics don't matter. Like, hard work beats genetics. Like, not if you're Icelandic. Not if you're from Iceland. It's not. You can work as hard as you fucking want. You're still not going to be 6'11" and 400 pounds. Fucking unbelievable, man. Like, it's probably, I mean, we'll have to do a thing on genetics. Because, I mean, a lot of times it's the people I know in sports that maybe aren't so dominated by physicality, genetics maybe don't play such a huge role. Right, like where it's not an exhibition of strength or size
like
or
ability. Like a pool player.
Yeah, sure.
Fucking
that's
billiards.
Not a fucking sport. Although we've turned it into one in grad school.
Right, but, that's true.
No, I mean, to me, like a lot of people, because I find people that, you know, you come across, these guys are like 20-inch arms that barely work out. It's like, oh, bro, like if you just fucking cared enough, yeah. Like you would be able to piece it together. But like in sports, like, billiards or maybe more skill-based sports with brute strength like basketball, like Steph Curry is like whatever, right? Like he's a tall guy, yeah. But he's not super tall.
Yeah, well, he's so probably 160.
Yeah, right. And so like that look, you look at him and go, oh, that's like attainable.
Yeah,
but then like he's not going to be world's strongest man.
We're getting off topic, dude. Sure, I have to say something or else I will hate myself if I don't put in this all episode, right. So when it comes to accessory for CrossFit, we're trying to fill in our work capacity. So the best fucking thing you can do is just raw work. You can work fucking hard.
Yeah.
And that's the thing in itself. But if you think of what we're trying to do, move large loads over long distances, take as much weight as you can load up on a fucking sled,
yeah.
And push that thing as far as you can.
He's shaking right
I'm
now.
I'm shaking because I feel shaking. It. I just fucking and feel yeah. It.
Okay, all right.
So I'd say one of the number one accessory movements for CrossFit, for your work capacity, is just sled pushes.
Okay.
You can do them heavy and short. Yeah. You can do them light and long. Fuck, yeah. I've drug an empty sled for a mile before.
Really?
Fucking terrible.
Did
but
you have nothing else? Like, that must have been a slow day for you. That was just like, who has the time for that?
Yeah, it's just work capacity.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. And you're going to be tired as shit after that.
Yeah.
You're using your entire body. You're just fucking walking, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah,
that
I
is
mean,
work capacity.
It makes sense. I get it. That was passionate.
That was about
moving shit. Like, holy crap. Just yeah. Like, no, you stop fucking talking about Icelandic shit. People for 2 seconds.
Yeah. It just hit me and I had to say it.
All right. So I mean, we covered some basic accessory movements of the power lifts, and then we sort of spun off to, I think what we could both agree on is like the real important stuff. Like, you know, the nitty gritty injury prevention, spinal stability, being able to assess not so much a movement's potential breakdown, but a joint's potential breakdown. Because really that's going to be what makes the difference at the end of the day. You know, whether it's the joints in your spine, the joints of the shoulder, the knees, the hips, the ankles. It's like knowing at what point that tissue tolerance is going to be met with a force greater than it can handle. At the end of the day, that's going to be what really saves you. And then as long as you can keep training, then eventually... Regardless of how good, bad your programming is, if you stay underweight and that weight goes up and you can still keep doing it, you're going to get stronger, right? Time and pressure makes fucking diamonds. Easy. Done deal. So, yeah, to close off, any other thing, anything you got to get off your chest?
I got it, man. I feel good now.
Good. Okay, he's not shaking anymore.
Yeah,
so.
I feel good.
All right, so we'll pay some bills. So, Lunderjack Productions, shout him out.
Mm-hmm.
Follow him Instagram, Facebook. If you're in the Greater Toronto Area, your music production needs on lock with Lunderjack Productions.
That's right. Check out Engine Fitness, E-N-J-I-N, fitness.com. Use code RXDRadio, all caps, for 15% off.
Is it 15%?
I think it's 15%.
Jen, what a homie.
That's a good amount off of barbell,
right? iTunes.
Yeah.
Ratings, reviews.
Five stars. You know the drill, guys.
Yeah.
Make sure you subscribe, share.
Follow us, like on
Interact Facebook
and Instagram. Yeah. Because this whole episode was, what's the name? Dude from Denmark. This was all prompted by Mickey from Denmark, who reached out to us and asked us about accessory work. So if you want us to rant about shit or maybe like a topic, like, hey, could you just not talk about this?
Yeah.
We'll do that as well. So that'll be it for today. Until next time.
All right. I'll see you later, guys.